I'm looking forward to it because, let's face it, as Mexican food goes, I think California is as good as it gets in the U.S. or is Texas?
You're asking the wrong person. In my opinion, Taco Bell and Chipotle are the best Mexican food in the world.
Welcome to Season 1, Episode 20 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
And remember, folks, we have our AltConf live podcast coming up real soon now. We already had over 350 tickets claimed. There are still a handful more. So please watch Twitter for the link. Sign up. Grab yours quick while you still can.
Yeah, and again, in case you forgot, we are going to have some very special guests. We got Christina Fox joining us, Guy Rambo, Kai Thomas, JP Samard. We're going to have a nice little panel format talking about what was just announced. Should be a good time.
And there's stacks more to come from both me and Sean during WWDC week. Of course, we're both watching the keynote. You're doing a live stream chat thing, Sean?
Yeah. Some of us weren't fortunate enough to get tickets to the actual show, so we got to sit at home and watch it, but that's all right. So I'm going to, you know, turn lemons into lemonade and have a little party on Twitch and let everybody join me, kind of watch the keynote and just chat about what's going on.
Speaking of parties, did you get your Fiesta Kit ticket?
I did indeed. Both the introduction and mastering.
Oh, fantastic.
Is it mastering Fiesta Kit? Yeah.
It is, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. That should be fun.
Yeah, it's at the Fox Den, which is because it's Tyler and Christina Fox who run the event. Oh, I want to remind folks, by the way, you know, Sean and I are going to be at AltConf. We'll be around the whole area for a lot of the week. We love having folks come and say hello. I love having folks, you know, chatting, saying hello, getting ideas and stuff. But I do try and give three simple rules, and I'd ask if you want to say hello, please abide by these rules. First, don't forget to tell me your name. Sorry, folks, to say, oh, hi, Paul, whatever, books, whatever, and don't say, I'm Bob, or I'm Jess, or I'm Laura, whatever it is. Just give me your names. I remember who you are in the future. Second, if we've met before, please just remind me. Oh, yeah, we met last year at WWDC to jog my memory, because I've been to so many events. I meet so many folks. Even with names, I still lose track. And third, if you see me going somewhere, often I'm going to, you know, a coffee date or dinner or something with someone in particular that I can't really delay. So if you want to talk to me, and I love to talk to you back, and I can't do it right then, it's not being me being rude. I'll just say, oh, yeah, sorry, I can't come right now. Let's catch up in an hour, 2 hours, whatever, and we can figure out a date by email. I totally want to talk. Totally want to talk it with like the code, whatever, but perhaps not that exact second.
Yeah, that clarification is very helpful, because when I was at iOSCon in London, you know, I know everybody from their little Twitter picture and their Twitter handle, you know? So oftentimes, you know, people might be wearing a hat in their Twitter picture or maybe wearing a suit and they look completely different. So I wouldn't even recognize them, even though I may have spoken with them many times on Twitter. So Paul, those are great advice there to help us remember who you are.
Well, there are a little spate of new Twitter avatars appearing, have you noticed?
I have. Everybody's like taking these nice professional pictures.
Well, because they've aged, you know, 11 months since the last time. So they want to have a new, easily recognizable double picture, which makes sense.
All right, Paul, let's kick things off with some news. And first up, we have Apple has announced this year's Apple Developer Academy in Naples, Italy. So if you're accepted, this is an amazing opportunity for students. You basically attend a year-long development program. And the kicker is you get a free Mac and a free iPhone to help you, you know, develop your apps on. The first stage is an online application. And then if you make it past that, you get to do an aptitude test in, you know, Paris, London, or Munich. And those are in July.
Also, you're in Naples, which is a great city.
So I've heard.
I should clarify to folks, this is not just for EU applicants. Yes, the in-person test is in Paris, London, or Munich, but you can apply from anywhere in the world. And, you know, I have folks say, Paul, what do I think of boot camp? Should I go for a boot camp? Obviously, boot camps are fine in their own way. This is a year-long hands-on boot camp from Apple, you know, through a serious university. This is the fastest, most efficient way to become an accredited iOS developer. And they help you so many ways. First, it's a free program, right? There's no cost to be in the program. The hardware is free. They give you everything you need to become an app developer in just a year.
And also, students will have the opportunity to participate in the enterprise track, which that'll give you in-depth training around the entire lifecycle of the app, design, implementation, deployment in the cloud, security, troubleshooting, all that good stuff. So that is way more than you would get from a typical bootcamp. So if you are a student, you are interested in this, highly recommend applying. It's an amazing opportunity. Next up, we have a pretty big announcement for a large number of developers out there, and that is that GitHub has announced a new sponsorship program called GitHub Sponsors. Nice name there. And I'll just kind of read a quote real quick to describe what that is. GitHub Sponsors allows the developer community to financially support the people who design, build, and maintain the open source projects they depend on directly on GitHub. Now, it's always been tough for open source developers to, you know, be financially supported for all their hard work, so this is great news.
Yeah, I said on Twitter that I am fully behind this. And a few folks quite negative about it, saying that it'll result in unreasonable support claims being made because someone put $10 in the coffers. I get unreasonable support claims now, quite frankly, you know, so I'm not terribly worried about that changing too much. But I think for a lot of people, this will be a real game changer. And I'm really impressed by how Microsoft's acquirement of GitHub has really transformed the company. We're seeing so many features shipping that were previously unthinkable or impossible or being a long way away. And this is complete out of the blue.
Yeah, and did you see like Ryan Nystrom just got brought onto GitHub too to build out like a whole mobile suite for GitHub stuff. So yeah, things are happening.
I can't think of a better person to do it, quite frankly.
Yeah, GitHub's a pretty nice app. So this is still in limited beta, and I'm sure more information and features will be released over time. But here's kind of what we know so far. Monthly payments with multiple sponsorship tiers. There's a small number of sponsored developers currently participating in this limited beta. And anyone who contributes to an open source project, you would be eligible to become a sponsored developer in the future, but there's currently a wait list. Again, they're kind of slowly rolling it out. And a cool thing is GitHub is actually matching up to $5,000 during the first year of a sponsorship. And during this first year, they're not going to take any fees, but you know they do reserve the right to take fees in the future. So this is kind of like the introductory offering just to help launch. But overall, not a bad deal.
I think it positions them where they want to be, which is the home of open source. And they've already hit that a long time ago because, you know, package managers like SPM or NPM or similar basically assume GitHub. You just say, I want to pull in a markdown library, this one here, and you'll get github.com/whatever. So it assumes GitHub. But if folks start to have their livelihood on GitHub, if they have all their income or a large chunk of their income come through GitHub, then they become tied to the platform, which is a great thing for GitHub, and it gives permanence to the developers too.
Moving on, we have a new project from Dave Verwer, author of iOS Dev Weekly, fantastic newsletter. If you're not signed up to that, I don't know why you're not, definitely check that out. But his new project is called iOS Dev Jobs. This is a weekly email newsletter where you'll find quality iOS developer job postings. I mean, currently there's listings from Apple, Capital One, Asana, Bloomberg, etc. I'm no longer in the job market, but I know how painful it can be to try to find all these jobs and apply it for them. So I definitely applaud Dave's efforts to ease this pain a little bit.
You know, he's done so much for the Swift community, starting with app review times a long time ago and iOS Dev Directory and iOS Dev Weekly, and now iOS Dev Jobs. He's a consistent person at the center of our community. There's actually a Pictures with Dave Verwer meme hashtag on during DubDub Week, because he goes to DubDub every year. Folks like to see him, get a picture with Dave. You know, because he's that well known, and he's such a nice guy. He works so hard and doesn't really get much credit for, I think. So it's really, it's great to see him launch new stuff, and I hope that it'll keep on giving him more momentum and more results too to help them keep on working for them.
As with every episode, let's talk about our picks. What do you got for us, Paul?
So my pick this time is not new. And in fact, I think it came back with Swift 4.2. And that's the ability to make Swift packages simpler using Package Manager, SPM. And you do it by bundling the C code and the Swift code together into one package.
Paul, I thought you always lived in the future. I thought you'd be on Swift like 5.8 by now. Like, what are you doing going back to Swift 4.2? What is this?
Well, the problem is now I'm doing all this transcendental time warp technology in Swift 9. Yeah, exactly. I have no time for Swift 4.2. It's so old. Because, there were a lot of SPM changes went through the evolution process. And it's hard to keep track of them all, basically. But anyway, I've been doing updates for all my books in Swift 5, and I think by the time this was out, they'll all be updated. And when I came to the Vapor book, my server-side Swift book, I wanted to go over all the packages I'd made for the projects to bring them up to Swift 5 as well. And I thought, you know, I'm updating them anyway, I could now take advantage of the new SPM functionalities and actually make them more efficient.
Well, I mean, I haven't tried Vapor yet, so I'm pretty focused on just iOS stuff. Can you explain it to me like I'm five? Like, what is this? Why should I care? I know Swift Package Manager isn't quite ready for iOS yet. Like, yet. What's the big deal here? Yeah, big keyword.
Yeah, one week in a day, hopefully, from now, it should be changing. We'll see. Lots of libraries we use are pure Swift, or sometimes a mix of Swift and Objective-C or whatever. But even though we have lots of them out there, there are 100 times more for C. You know, things like GTK for user interfaces, or GD for graphics, or Discount for doing Markdown, or whatever. C's been around a long time, and Python and PHP and Ruby and more have hooks into these C libraries. Now, of course, we write those in Swift, but why bother? What normally happens is that we make a bridge. We create Swift code that's able to call down into the original C code, just like those other languages do, so we can build on top of that. And Swift actually always made that easy. In fact, even before Swift 4.2, it only took a few minutes to build a bridge between C code and Swift, so you could write all the C functionality you wanted in Swift. And that bridge would then be a Swift package all by itself. And once that's done, you'd then write a second Swift package to sit on top, like an onion layer around it, which would include the first one as a dependency.
So much going on, right? So the first one was pure C, and the second one was pure Swift?
Right, exactly. So you see, although the original C package was fine, all the functions were there, it was super raw. Folks had to think about allocating and freeing up memory, for example, which just isn't standard for Swift developers. So the second package added this sort of sugary coating over the Swiftified C library. It was a layer on top that abstracted all the code, make it easy to work with, making it a nicer API.
So that all sounds fair. So what's the big deal? What's changed?
Well, what changed is that you can now put both dependencies in one package. The C bridge and the Swift wrapper now go together. And this changed Swift 4.2 thanks to SE 0208. So the C library became a target rather than a package all by itself. Which means, of course, SPM has fewer packages to fetch and less version resolution to do, which means just less work overall. Now, of course, it means, yes, more work for me, but I had to move two of my repos over, but the end result is just better for everyone. Anyway, that's my pick. Sean, what do you have?
Yeah, Paul, so my pick this week is a three-part retrospective from Spectre by Ben Sandowski and Sebastian DeWith, creators of the Hide and Spectre camera apps. If you haven't used it, Spectre is a new camera app that focuses on photographs that use computational long exposures. Now, if you don't know what that means, you ever see those pictures of like a stream where the water's all blurry and it looks like it's flowing? It's just a long exposure. But so those type of pictures, but done with your phone. And this retrospective is a really long three-part blog post. So we're going to do our best to keep this quick and sum it up. But I highly recommend reading through it. It's fascinating stuff. And to be honest, these retrospectives have become a little cliche in the startup world, but I absolutely love them. I'm a sucker for it. I just love reading about like the decision-making process, when it comes to managing their code base and just the overall product, right? Because this stuff isn't easy. So I love hearing, again, about people's decisions. So if you're building an app or working on an existing product, hearing their thought process, I think will definitely resonate with you. Now, Paul, have you had a chance to try out the new Spectre app?
I have. I got it on launch day. And, these two, Sebastian and Ben, obviously released Halide beforehand, and they've talked so much about their development process. Going from Objective-C and Swift and using Metal, it's fascinating watching them evolve their code base dramatically to build bluntly best-of-class stuff. And if ever Apple were to release a pro camera, I think they'd just basically acqui-hire these two.
Yeah, if you haven't tried out Halide or Spectre, I highly recommend it. So yeah, back to this retrospective. The first part of this is build a feature or build an app. Now, on the surface, building a long exposure feature into an existing camera app, that kind of sounds like the obvious way to go. But it wasn't that simple, because implementing this large of a feature would really compromise Halide's streamlined experience, and you just run the risk of building something like way too complex, right? Every time you keep adding stuff to an existing product, it just gets more complex, and there's a risk there. So they ended up deciding to build a separate app for Spectre, but again, that's not an obvious choice either. And again, this is why I love hearing their thought process, because these are not black and white easy decisions. So that's why it's so fascinating to me. But anyway, people don't want an extra app for something very similar. He had a great line in the blog post, says people want a bicycle, not two unicycles. I thought that was perfect. Another thing they ran into is, would their existing customers who have already paid for Halide, because it's a paid app, like, would they be receptive to paying for another camera app? You know, and that's a very valid concern. And again, it's these business and product decisions that I just find absolutely fascinating. Both options have risks involved. It's not an easy choice.
Of course, the thing we all want to know is why it's called Spectre RE and not Spectre ER.
I don't know.
I did ask them.
Okay. Do you know? Okay. Well, it sounds like you know.
I do. I do know. It turns out that when Ben and Sebastian were writing down names, were written down with a UK spelling, and it stuck.
Mm.
There you go.
Nice.
Think of a good. It's those little nuggets of information you come to spill some coffee for, isn't it?
No, I know. Yeah, yeah. Only the best here. Only the best. Moving on to part two. Part two is design focus. So we'll kind of like skim over that just for the sake of time, because again, super long article. We could talk forever about it. But the TLDR, too long didn't read for those not in the know, is that they wanted to just go for a very simple design. You know, one button press, get one long, beautiful exposure. That was it. Now, part three is interesting because that's when they go back to engineering. And, you know, I wanted to talk about one major part of that. And, you know, naturally, when you have two camera apps built by the same company, you're going to have a lot of, you know, similar or duplicate code. And they discuss how they refactored out their photo reviewer, you know, like after you take the photo, the how you can kind of like review it. And they refactored that out into a shared, you know, library or module. And that module was, you know, 7,000 lines of code of the overall roughly 20,000 lines of code. So that's like one third of their app. Now, again, kind of back to what I was saying before, on the surface, that sounds like an obvious decision. Of course, shared code, refactor it out, good to go. But as with everything in programming, that is not without the trade-offs. Because the apps are similar, but they're not, you know, exactly the same. So supporting this shared library will cause overhead as, you know, both products iterate and mature and kind of, you know, deviate from each other. This is a trade-off they are aware of, but they felt it was worth it. And again, I know I keep saying this, but these are the type of decisions, the art of programming, if you will, that I love hearing about and love reading about. So like you said earlier, Paul, I'm so thankful that Ben and Sebastian have decided to be open about this, and they're constantly sharing their process because I think it helps the community as a whole.
I spoke to Ben about this in March, and what I like about this pair is you've got a developer at the top of the game and the designer at the top of their game, and they've kind of got this sort of 80s bedroom coder mentality almost. They don't need massive marketing resources. They don't need massive think tanks and product, you know, feedback groups and similar. They just want to get in and write their best. And you know, I would have thought I would have expected to see much more tension between, you know, can we get this exact design or can we get this exact code right. But there isn't. According to Ben, they get on really, really well. You know, Sebastian's able to approach things from a very codey perspective. Ben's got a nice design interest as well. So there's enough overlap that they aren't, you know, squabbling or fighting. They're just going in the same direction, the same vision. And that's just amazing to see. And this is a result of two fantastic apps from a very, very small team. And now, just days before WWDC kicks off, we asked you, what developer changes would you want to see announced at WWDC? We had so many responses, kicking off with some for Xcode here. Antoine van der Lee said, Xcode being open sourced, or at least a possibility to create plugins. I think that's it, really. End the show there. Xcode be open sourced.
Yeah, done deal. Just announce that and walk off the stage.
Yeah.
It's over.
Mic drop. That's WWDC level one finish.
That is the whole State of the Union. That's it.
Yeah. I was looking through some of the Corelibs Foundation stuff on GitHub. That is open source. And there's comments there from the 90s about Code Warrior, which is an IDE so old I never even used it myself. I imagine most of Xcode's like that.
Is that how you spend your Friday nights, going through the core lib from the 90s?
Yeah, that's a glass of wine. Yeah, a real classic sort of evening for me. I can imagine Xcode code's disastrously grim in places. Anyway, Maurice Krause said, I would love to see Xcode enhancements that like better refactoring and something like SwiftLint baked in. And Kirill Panev said, a modular Xcode. Let me pick what I need and keep it lean and fast. Modular Xcode. That's interesting because I did a blog post, about a year or so ago, maybe 18 months, about how Xcode has risen dramatically in size. Because the Xcode 5 download was just 2 gigabytes, and it was 4 point something installed, and now it's, you know, 10 or 12 installed. So it's really blown up. And it's interesting because before that, xCloud had been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It was up to 4 gigs. And Apple at 2011 WC called it out and said, you know, we know it's getting big. We've worked super hard to make it really small. And now it's sort of 3 times bigger than when they made it really small. So it's kind of gone reverse a little bit there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, modular S-code does sound pretty interesting for all those reasons you said. I'm, you know, as we've mentioned in previous episodes, I'm a fan of SwiftLint, so I am happy to see something baked in like that. And I think based on SE0250, the whole style guide thing, I think that is probably going to happen. If not this year, maybe soon, hopefully.
You'd think so, but 5.1's got to land, like, in a week.
Yeah.
I think in beta form, we're going to see it in a week, and 250 is not in there. Which I'm disappointed about, you know, so that might mean they cannot get through the built-in linter in time. We'll see. We had some answers about Swift Package Manager, aka SPM. Tommy Kimimaki said, my number one wish will be iOS support for Swift PM, although I know that's not coming yet. My second wish is CI based on Buddy Build. And Luke Street said, SPM for iOS. Also, dynamically linked frameworks that can be downloaded at runtime. That way, you don't need to include all your features in the main binary.
Yeah, I just want to echo all the SPM for iOS statements there. I'm a fan of using first-party stuff more than third-party stuff like Carthage or CocoaPods. And I have no experience with Swift Package Manager yet because I'm just iOS-based. I only work with that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, CocoaPods has served us well, but the promise of SPM is no more Ruby, no more epic Git master repos from CocoaPods and actual fast advancing feature support. The practice is nothing of those things, but in theory, it's going to be really, really nice. We have some reports about iPad stuff. Rick Allen and Jason Mitchell have both said they really, really want to see Xcode for iPad. It'd be super nice. Of course, it'd be nice to have real Xcode for iPad. I'm just struggling to see how it's going to work without a major, major redesign of the way Interface Builder works. And Interface Builder is old. It's been that way for, I don't know, 20 years or something now. The UI has not changed in a long, long time. And there's a throw all the way for an iPad port. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, this is just brainstorming. And I want to build on what Jason Mitchell said. His thing says Xcode in parentheses light for iPad. And this is kind of an idea I've talked about before. Maybe not the full-fledged, crazy, you know, huge Xcode, all the features, right? But maybe if there's like a light version that can still allow us to, you know, be a little productive on the go, I think I would like to see something like that. That being said, I think that's pretty far-fetched. I don't know if we're going to see that one.
A number of folks, including Marco Pont and Mohammed Azam, said they want to see live reload like React Native and Flutter.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, those are blasphemous words there you're throwing out. But who wouldn't like to, you know, I mean, we've all done that, right? Any UI change, build and run, check it, build and run, check it. Like, that is annoying. So, yeah, even though you use the blasphemous words of React Native and Flutter, I think this would be an awesome feature to have.
I get the impression there's some sort of declarative UI design system still to come. Maybe not this year, but perhaps next year. And you'd think that's their chance. If they're going to do it, you know, if they're going to do iPad, Xcode, if they're going to do live reload, when they rethink the way IB works, when they rethink the way UIKit controls are created, that's their big chance. And I hope against hope, perhaps, that's also when dependency injection with Storyboard becomes not painful. We had some answers about better debugging. Guy Rambo says he'd like to see rapid UI prototyping without IB and not necessarily through playgrounds, but he thinks that's more a 2020 thing. Ella Shapiro says make IB designables clearer to use and way easier to debug. And Smongo says a better simulator that can actually run more complex SpriteKit scenes. It's been a while now, I think quite a few years, since SpriteKit's been smooth on any iPad simulator. I think it's been maybe 4 years or so, which is a real shame.
Yeah, when I work with SpriteKit, you know, the app I'm working on, you know, has the privilege of connecting via Bluetooth, so I don't have to mess with the SpriteKit on the simulator. Don't have to deal with anything like that. I want to piggyback on what Ellen said about making IB designables clearer and way easier to debug, because basically, in my experience, it's almost useless to use. It's caused my storyboards to slow way down, and like she said, it's hard to debug. I've just stopped using them, so just making them useful might be helpful.
Yeah, I love them too, and I use them for a while, and they always start crashing the storyboard interface backend thing. And I'd love to see things like, you know, enum support in a drop-down menu bar inside, you know, that kind of thing would be lovely as well. There's so many ways that can improve. And to finish up, we have one here from JK Cross. He wants to see Swift Core framework on iOS. This is real dreamland stuff. I'd love to see it as well. So on iOS, we have JavaScript Core, which is a full JavaScript parsing and execution engine, which you can use inside our apps. You can do whatever you like, or any JS you like inside your app. And it just seems bizarre that we have that for JavaScript and not for a real language like Swift.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Swift Over Coffee. Now, normally we would leave you with the next week's open ballot, but Paul, we have no idea what that's going to be, right? Because we'll be at DubDub, live podcast.
No idea. Yep. Apple could say this on Monday, books. We're doing books now. Forget the devices, books. And I'm screwed, basically. Then, I'm going home.
And then they're going to start a YouTube channel, and then they're going to start playing video games on Twitch. Like, they're just going to destroy us.
Yep.
No, but seriously, though, we probably will still do an open ballot because we are doing our 1 hour special live Swift Over Coffee episode. But again, with everything being announced early that week, we don't want to put out an open ballot now because who knows what Apple's going to say. So follow at Swift Over Coffee on Twitter. Be on the lookout for the open ballot. Don't forget to leave us a review. We'll be your best friends as always. And again, hopefully we'll see a lot of you next week live at WWDC. Feel free to say hi. That's going to wrap it up. I'll talk to you next time.
Bye.